Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
Next up, Tina Stromstead, owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco, California. Hi, Tina. How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you doing, Sal?
Oh, I'm doing just great. And Tina speaks with us every week at this time from the Authentic Movement Body Soul is the name of her business. And Tina, can you review for us your website address?
Yes, it's my name. .com. So it's TINASTROMSTED.com.
And thank you for that, Tina. And we always like to refresh everyone on what you do there and how you go about doing it.
Yes, I'm a licensed psychotherapist, a Jungian psychoanalyst, which means that I engage some of the elements of the work of Carl Jung, who is a Swiss psychiatrist, who worked very deeply with the unconscious, with dreams, with myths, fairy tales, people's spiritual life, that sense of something deeper that can give life more meaning, in addition to seeing things as problems, you know, to be solved or fixed or worked out. You know, that his sense, and often it's true, that symptoms have a deeper root system that go back to something more substantial in the self that wants to be attended to. So it's a way of bringing depth. In fact, it's called depth analysis or depth psychotherapy to what we're doing in talk therapy. And it can address all the different kinds of issues that we have as humans. People specialize in different things. I'll say a little more about my specialties in a moment, but one of them is Jungian analysis. And so people come in with the usual kinds of things that we all can struggle with at different times, having to do with repeating patterns in relationships, sometimes physical illnesses and the way they're changing our life, grief, loss, history of trauma of some kind, all different kinds of things that we go through. Vocational questions: is this the right work that I'm involved in, or is it what I thought I should do, and it doesn't really make me happy or serve my soul or bring more meaning to my life? What is it like to move through the stages of life, from being a child to young adulthood to being a more mature adult to aging, and wanting to reflect on the meaning of one's life, which becomes important at any transitional time, but particularly in later life as well, when we reflect back and want to bring more meaning to what it meant to be here on this earth. The other specialties are that I'm a dance movement therapist and a somatic psychotherapist and educator. So I train therapists in how to pay attention to the life of the body, the expression of the body, as it's trying to come through, often spontaneously, while we're talking, to let us know something deeper about how we're really feeling about something, or where we may be holding memory or sensation or a deeper emotion in a part of the body in a way that feels trapped or hasn't come into awareness yet, that can really complement what we're talking about. So these are some of the things that I do. So I see patients here in San Francisco, and I teach at a university in Santa Barbara, and I work in different countries with people from different cultures. And then I write articles, and some of those are available on my website for people who are interested.
Thank you, Tina, for reminding us of all those things that you're doing. Today we're going to be talking, folks, about dreams, and if you'd like to speak with Tina about the subject specifically of dreams or anything else, give us a call at 631-406-9054, 631-406-9054. So, Tina, let's start it out as broadly as possible. Dreams, exactly what are they?
Oh, such a great question. Dreams are deeply valuable stories from the unconscious trying to tell us about our inner life. a colleague who's also a Jungian analyst, Clarissa Pinkola Estes, calls them letters from home. And they give us information about ourselves that isn't necessarily available to us during our waking daytime state, but they come to us at night and kind of fill in the gaps and give us information that may not otherwise be available to us. So we could say they tell us about feelings we're not quite conscious of. They can bring in bits of memory that want to be reviewed or that might help us in a current life situation. They can tell us about relationships and even whether they may be good for us or not. And, you know, it's never usually black and white like that, but they can give you a lot of information about that. They can tell us sometimes about physical illness. Some people have been able to diagnose that something is amiss in their body with a certain image that can come up. We can come back to that if you want.
Yeah.
They're guides. They're guides from our inner life.
So dreams then, is it kind of like an unconscious movie that your mind is playing for you in the middle of the night?
Yes. Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And the thing is that we don't only want to watch the movie in an unconscious way. What can be really helpful is to do what we can to try to remember the dream when we wake so we can benefit from the story in the movie and what it's trying to communicate. So Carl Jung used to say that a dream that isn't worked with is like a letter you receive that you don't open.
Now let's talk about that, about remembering dreams. Why do we remember some dreams so vividly, and others, there are gaps, and we really can't make sense of it because this is here and that's there, and, you know, you can't connect the dots, while others, you know, they'll make you wake up with a start.
That's so true. You know, dreams are also mysterious, so I don't know that any of us could really say that we know exactly why that's true, but in working with people for decades with dreams, and in keeping my own dream journals and working with them as I did in my own analysis and now on my own in the morning to help guide my life. They're like an inner compass. Sometimes a dream will come across, as you said, really clearly. It's like a guest or a visitor knocking on your door. It really wants your attention, particularly if it repeats. And repeating dreams are common. It's like someone trying to tell you something and you haven't gotten the message. So it has to come back and try to tell you in as many ways as it can with the details that are slightly different. Some dreams you can't remember because they're a little bit too far away from what you're aware of. They're really deeper in the unconscious and you can't quite catch them yet in your fishing net that you pull up in the morning with the treasures from the nighttime dreaming. Or sometimes they're too frightening. You know, they may be bringing up bits of trauma or things like that where parts of the psyche had to kind of go into hiding, like the sensation stayed in this part of the brain, the image stayed over here, the feeling stayed separate. They haven't been able to come together yet. Or you may not remember it because you might not yet value your dreams. You may not yet think that they're important. And so you might just turn over and say, oh yeah, I guess I had a dream, and go back to sleep. And if you really need more sleep, that could be a fine thing to do.
Yeah, right.
But if you can just turn over gently and not move your body too much, that's kind of key, and not wake up in a jolt with a very loud alarm clock, but maybe with soft music on your iPhone or something, and just write down a few phrases or images, or even in modern times now we can talk into our iPhones, record it, then you can have a look when you get up in the morning. And usually when you start looking at some of the things you've written down, the dream will start to come back to you more fully.
What about, how do nightmares fit into this? You know, sometimes people wake up, they call them night terrors, and if it's repeating or maybe just a one-time only thing, what makes them so extreme?
Yeah, well, as you can imagine, usually they're connected with fright, you know, with something that we couldn't tolerate during the day, or that maybe we didn't even know made us so anxious. But at night, when the ego is asleep, so the ego, let's say, is that part of us in our waking life that directs our life, that helps us function, that makes choices and conscious decisions, or relatively conscious. We all have work to do on that. And it filters our inner life from our outer world. So the ego helps us not just blurt out everything we feel or think, you know, without reflecting on it at least a little bit ahead of time and saying, is that really true? Do I really want to say that now to this person? Is that useful? You know, and the ego also helps us titrate or, what can we say, decide in some ways how much to take in.
Filter? Do you mean like a filter?
Filter.
Okay.
Thank you. That's a great word. So it helps us filter what's kind of bubbling up from the inside that might push to want to come out, and working with, well, how much and when and with whom, having discernment with your ego. And it also helps us filter how much comes in so we don't get too flooded. So a nightmare might be saying that something came in that really scared you, that you didn't know how to deal with at the time. And at night, it kind of bedevils you and comes back and wakes you up. And those are really good dreams to work with, the feelings associated with them, the associations. What are my thoughts and feelings about that dream or about the person in the dream? And sometimes to move them or draw them or even act them out, I can come back to that maybe another time because I do a lot of work with the body, with dreams. But the act of sharing a dream, whether it's a real gift, an inspiring dream, or a puzzling dream, and certainly a nightmare, can help a lot. With the nightmare, you don't feel so alone. You have a guide or someone who's right there with you in the material of the dream, who can help you work with it. You know, sometimes people, for example, have a dream in which they're being chased by something menacing. And they might have it night after night or every so often when they're in a situation that triggers it, you know, where they feel like they're not quite up to a task, or that somebody's having negative feelings about them, or that they have to run. They can't face something. And so I might even work with them and say, if you could feel a little bit safer in the room right now, what might we need to do? And they might say, I need to sit a little closer, or I need to relax. I might invite them to put their feet on the ground, to put their hands on their belly and breathe. You know, whatever is right for each person. But these are things that can help. And then I might say, would it be all right with you to take some time and re-enter the dream a little bit in the safety of the room here with me? And you can come out whenever you want. And they might then see how the dream starts and where it goes, what the action is, who the characters are, what the relationships are. And I might say, oh, okay, and now here's this part where you're being chased by someone or something. Do you think that it might be possible to take a breath, feel your feet on the ground, your body in the chair, the support of the chair, and to very gradually just begin to turn your head so that you could see who or what that figure might be, and I'll be right here with you. And very often people can. Sometimes they can't yet if they're not quite ready. And then I might have them engage in a dialogue with the figure. I might just begin with having them describe the figure, what they see, because they're kind of doing it at a little bit of a distance. They're not in the dream being bedeviled by it or frightened by it. They're right there in the room with me, and they can look at it with some objective distance. And then I might say, could you ask that figure for its name? Could you ask that figure why it's here? And maybe what message it's trying to give you now? And it often really helps drain the anxiety or the fright from the dream, and what the message is begins to come forward in a way that's useful for them. I can give you an example if you want. That would take a little more time, but I'm going to pause there.
Okay, I tell you what, when we come back, give us the example, and also ponder this. Some people say they never dream. What does that tell you? Mm-hmm. We'll get to both of those points. Tina will finish her thought on the thread that she had, and then we'll talk about why people don't dream. Tina Stromstedt is the owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco, and she'll have more for us right after this.
On a Cape Cod shore, 16 striped bass fish and a horseshoe crab were found dead, killed by a harmful algal bloom. The town blamed excessive lawn fertilizer for polluting the water. They restricted lawn fertilizing to once a year. The state overruled, mandating 5 times a year. Though the striped bass died on a Falmouth shore, fertilizer pollution is a national problem, clogging our waterways. If you believe in our rights to clean water and beaches, if you want to stop the killing of fish by excessive fertilizer, please join with us. Make a donation for responsible stewardship. Acting together, we can have clean beaches and more fish. Please visit www.donateforoceans.org. That is www.donate4oceans.org.
Many of us want to find a way to help others, a way to give a little back out of the much that we've been blessed with. St. Joseph Catholic Church sends many needy students home for the weekend with food that they might not have been able to eat without the church's help. Their Backpack Buddies program feeds these children at a cost of about $1,000 every week. Give these children something on their plates and give their parents the peace of mind of not having to worry about their children going hungry. Go to stjosephjasper.com or visit their Facebook and Twitter at St. Joe Jasper. Contact Mike directly at mike@stjosephjasper.com or call 812-482-1805. St. Joseph Catholic Church, food for every child.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
And our guest is Tina Stromstedt, the owner at Soul's Body in San Francisco. And Tina can be reached on the phone with us today if you have a question, 631-406-9054. 631-406-9054. So now, Tina, you before the break, you were developing an idea, and you said it was going to take a little more time to fill it out. So why don't you go back to that?
Sure. Now, this dream might sound scary in the beginning because you were asking about nightmares, so I just want to mention that to the radio audience. There was someone that I worked with some years back who had a repeating dream that she was being chased by a man with a knife. Now, I want to say to begin with that one of the ways we think about dreams, and a good way to start with a dream, is to imagine that every figure in the dream is a part of the dreamer. They're not necessarily about other people. Sometimes they are. Sometimes there are messages that can be helpful to other people that come up in our dreams, or helpful to us that are pictured, you know, in other people that we know in our dreams, sometimes people we don't know. But it's very useful to consider, how might this figure be a part of me that's trying to give me the gift of a message of some kind? So in this case, the woman had a dream with a man chasing her with a knife, and it came often. It was a repeating nightmare that really terrified her. And we worked with it over a number of weeks so that she could kind of gradually get used to it and kind of calm down in between. and work with other things in her life that were coming up. But since it repeated, we could also continue to come back to it. And so when I asked for her associations and if she knew this figure, she was able at a certain point to work with it and turn and face the figure in her imagination. And she saw that it was a young man that she actually knew that she had a crush on as she was when she was a young person. But she wasn't ready to be with him at that point. She was too scared of being in a relationship. And so she passed that one by. And don't we all do that at different times in our lives? And maybe we aren't ready for that person or that relationship. Or maybe we really are, and we need to do the work on the feelings that prevent us from allowing us to get closer. So in this case, she had met a new man, but she kept having this repeating nightmare, and she thought it was telling her that the new man was wrong for her again. And so at a certain point, she faced it. It was the young man she hadn't been ready for. And then I invited her to switch roles as if in a role play and act as if to sort of embody the man with the knife. And I offered her a pillow, and she did a kind of movement with the knife as if she was plunging the knife into the pillow, not into a person, not into anything that could hurt, but into the pillow so she could feel kind of the thrust of it, the feeling of it. And then I asked her to speak as the man, and I said, what are you feeling right now? Is there something you're trying to tell her or to get to? And the man said, she got hurt, and she closed her heart. I want to open up her heart again to make a space for love again. Now, this is a kind of Valentine's dream, in a way, the day after mm-hmm. Valentine's. So it wasn't terrifying in this case, in the end. It was a part of her that she had bypassed. Her heart had been hurt on a number of occasions, and whose hasn't? You know, that's part of how we learn through life experience. And she kind of had scar tissue over her heart. She had closed it up and didn't dare to love again. And so this dream figure in this case, when she unpacked it, and these things mean different things to each person, so that's why we have to take time to find out what they mean for that person, it offered her an avenue or a guide to what it was that the dream was trying to tell her. And after that, she was able to talk about her fears and to begin to gradually open her heart again and to work with things when they came up. So she was able to get into the relationship with the man that she had begun to see.
Okay. Well, thank you for that explanation and illustration, Tina. Well, we've got about a minute or so left. So can you tell us briefly, some people don't dream. It's because they just don't fall into a deep enough sleep to have their bodies permit dreaming?
Well, actually, you know, it's one of those common misconceptions, in a way. From the sleep labs, we know that we all dream, say, 5 to 7 dreams a night. It's just a question of whether we can remember them. We often dream in REM sleep, that deeper part of the sleep cycle, but not only in REM sleep. And we have hypnagogic dreams, those images that play, those little movies that come when we're between sleeping and the waking state. And those count too. So it's more a question of, before you go to sleep, letting your dreams know, I value you. You matter. I would love to remember you and receive your guidance. And I'm going to jot down a little something in the morning of what I remember, just even a few minutes, or speak it into your phone or tape recorder, as I mentioned. And then work with them. You can draw them, move them, join a dream group, work with your therapist or analyst, sometimes share them with your partner over breakfast, as long as you don't judge them, but you maintain an attitude of curiosity. They will come to you. I'm going to leave you with a quote from Jung, who said, the face we turn to the unconscious is the face it turns toward us. It's the face you turn to your own dreaming, your own unconscious, is the face it turns toward you. So like any relationship, if you value it, it will befriend you as well, and it will come to you and enrich your life.
Thank you so much, Tina Stromstedt. I'm afraid we are out of time for this week, but maybe we could pick up the whole dreams subject in a future show.
Sure.
Okay.
Love to.
If you would remind us again where folks could reach out to you on your website, social media, and so forth.
Sure. My website is my name. It's TinaStromstedt.com. That's TinaStromstedt.com. And on my website, you can read about different ways of working. You can see video clips of working with dreams, with movement, for example. You can get copies of articles on a wide range of different things related to body-oriented psychotherapy, dreaming, dance movement therapy, Jungian psychology, and so forth. Thank you, Sal. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in.
And thank you, Tina, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you.
And we'll have more right after this.
Broadcasting from the financial capital of the world, this is NBRFM, New York City.
When I was little, I didn't talk for a long time. I liked things to always be the same. Anything new or different would scare and upset me. I was very sensitive to lights and sounds. It was almost like I had bigger eyes and ears than everyone else. So I built secret hiding places where nothing could get in. I didn't like looking people in the eye. It made me feel uncomfortable. I'd throw big tantrums over little things, like when my socks didn't match. Sometimes I'd do the same things over and over. Until one day, I found out I had autism. My family got me help. Slowly, I learned how to live with it better.
You can see signs of autism in children as young as 18 months. Early intervention can make a lifetime of difference. Learn the signs at autismspeaks.org/signs. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.